connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning. This is Paula Granquist, and you're listening to Art Zany, radio for the imagination. Thank you for listening to the show that celebrates creating and stories. Let's tune our imaginations together. So happy summer, everybody. Today, the 21st of June, 2024, is the first full day of summer. How do you plan to honor the new season? I wish I had an annual tradition that welcomes summer, or at least something better than, yikes, it's already summer. How will we ever get ready for vacation? Do I already have to think about the kids returning to school? Maybe this is the year that I will slow down for a minute and honor this new beginning of summer. And I'm thinking about starting in my own backyard. Maybe quiet time with the sounds and smells of summer. Maybe a good book. Years ago, I read the book Life of Pi by Jan Martel, and I've been thinking about that this week. I loved this novel. This is a book about a boy and an adventure on a boat and a tiger, but it's also about so much more. The part that I keep returning to is the boy's exploration and fascination with the beliefs of religions. He's a boy who is curious about the world, and one of the ways that he explores that is through visiting religious places of many different faiths. He was born a Hindu, but found that he adored the love and humanity of Christianity, and he admired the connections of the followers and the rituals of Islam. He found it all fascinating. It was the world that wasn't sure what to make of this idea of a life of multiple religions. I admired that boy, Pi. And that he asked questions, listened, and took time to discover this other way of the world. It's been a long time since I read Life of Pi, and thinking about this makes me want to read it again. It was a fascinating novel. And I hope I have the time to reread this book. I'm beginning to wonder if sometimes life has too much searching. As I grow older, I realize that there's so much to learn in the world, too much for one person. And maybe we should get in touch with what is right in front of us and inside of us. Maybe I've reached that time when it's okay to think about putting down an anchor for a bit and taking time to trust that what I need is already here. I think I'll start with summer because that's right where I am now. That feels like a good place to begin. Today is the first full day of summer that there will ever be, and the only one of the summer of 2024. The seasons unfold and arrive over and over, and I'm the one that needs to pause and savor. I would like to connect to my rhythm of the seasons, and I would like to embrace these rituals I think about often and write down, but never seem to get the habit going. So today on Art Zany Radio, I'm thrilled to share this exploration with author Teresa Peterson. She is a great guide to the process of living in the seasons, exploring nature, and finding the meaning of ceremony in your life. Today in the Art Zany Radio studio, we'll talk with Teresa Peterson about her new book, Perennial Ceremony, Lessons and Gifts from a Dakota Garden. You can learn more at the University of Minnesota Press website, upress.umn.edu. And you'll also be excited to learn that she's coming to Content Bookstore on Thursday, June 27th, that's next week, at 6 o'clock p.m. Teresa Peterson is a Sisseton, Wahpeton, Dakota, and citizen of the Upper Sioux community. She's an author with her uncle, Walter Labatt Jr., of voices from, and I'm going to try this, Pejuhutazizi. Boy, I bet I didn't get that right. We'll check in with Teresa in a minute. Dakota Stories and Storytellers. She also wrote the children's book Grasshopper Girl and is a contributor to Voices Rising, Native Women Writers. Perennial Ceremony, Lessons and Gifts from a Dakota Garden. It helps us travel through a garden's seasons towards healing, reclamation, and wholeness for us and for our beloved relative, the earth. There's so much in this book, prose, poetry, recipes, and she tries to show us how she found refuge from the struggle to reconcile her Christianity and Dakota spirituality, discovering solace and ceremony in communing with the earth. So let's get started. There's a lot to talk about. I want to welcome to Art Zany Radio, Teresa Peterson. Got my fingers crossed that we are connected and that she is there. Welcome, Teresa.
Hi, Paula. Halchana washte. Good morning to you.
Oh, good morning. You can help me with that pronunciation of the book, Voices from?
Pejuhutazizi.
Pejuhutazizi.
Yeah, so that's the yellow medicine.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And that's part of the journey we're going to learn today is to learn some of those Dakota words and learn about your gardens. So I want to start with that. Tell us what's going on in your garden today on this first day of summer. I'm wondering what you're making from your garden this week.
Yeah, isn't that, I just love that we're here on the first day of summer to talk about the book, but, you know, more importantly, what all of Earth has to offer us during the season. So, yeah, I'm having an abundance of asparagus right now. I just picked our scapes from our garlic, snow peas. I just gathered our first round of peas to freeze. Let's see what else. I can, you know, of course, there's the chives and some of those type of things. Our raspberries are getting really close. So I would say in the next couple of weeks, we'll be abundant with raspberries to pick.
Sounds lovely and perfect.
Yeah.
And that's how you've arranged the book. It's seasonal. And one of the things we learn is the season's names. So I'd love it if you could teach us and take us through the different seasons. You start the book in spring, so maybe we'll start there and help us with a little of that pronunciation.
Wetu.
Wetu.
Yeah, it's the time of blood or the time when things grow. It's, you know, the rebirth. And, you know, I just felt it appropriate to start with that because that's, you know, like new beginning. So that's the springtime. And then after that, today starts Bdoketu, the time of potato. So that references to our prairie potato, which is the tipsina, the turnip, the prairie turnip. So
like
that was
potato?
One of our traditional staples. Yep.
More like a potato or more like a turnip?
More like a turnip. And for whatever reason, that's how it came, you know, prairie potato. I know there's an Ojibwe reference similar to that. So, yep, that's what was one of our traditional staples. And then fall is Dayetu, the time of otter.
Dayetu. Boy, I'm glad.
Dayetu, yeah.
Dayetu.
And then Waniatu, a time when the snow lives.
Waniatu. Goodness. It was so fun to read this book and to learn about some of those things. And I sure appreciate you helping with me with that because we're going to go through some of the things that the Dakota will learn a lot. And I am a little nervous about some of those pronunciations. So I appreciate you being willing to teach me. It's hard when you read a book and you create a sound that you want to connect with it, but you're not sure if it's right. So it's great to have you as a guide. And maybe we could start, because one important word I thought for everybody to learn might be the word for Minnesota, which is you mentioned several times throughout the book. And it's M-N-I, for those listening, space S-O-T-A, space M-A-K-O-S-E. And I have an idea, but I don't want to try it because I want to hear from you.
Minnesota Makoche.
Land
of cloudy waters. There's different, you know, interpretations. They're all correct. Sometimes you hear Minnesota. So land of cloudy waters or lands that reflect the sky. And of course, if you fly over the Twin Cities on an airplane, you can see that, why it's, you know, referred to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's a beautiful place, and we are lucky. I saw a headline today. It was something about the blessings of the waters, and how we should think about that, and that. But it's also become, in this the world of environmental change and climate change, a challenge for all of us. And you know, down the road, it we may be lucky that we live in Minnesota, so we are thankful for the rain, even if it feels like it's too much.
I was looking at the weather report and wondering how I was going to get to Northfield next week, and we'll have to do a little rerouting with the flooding that's happening. And I'm trying to be grateful for it still, even though it's getting to be a little too much, and wondering how my garden will fare with too much water. Mm-hmm. But it still feels like a blessing after so many years of a drought.
Right. And that's you write about that in this book. And I think that that's one thing that's really important, and an aspect of this book that I love. You base it on telling the truth, and that it's so powerful to you know, be a part of this journey that you take. And part of that journey takes us through the truth about the history in Minnesota of many of the Native Americans. And I tell you, the part that was really hard to read, and I'm sure it was hard to write too, was some of the history of the boarding schools. And you start with that early in the book. And I do want to tell people that you conclude at the end with a very hopeful section about what's happening at the University of Minnesota Morris, their campus. Mm-hmm. Do you feel hopeful that the sharing of this history will help change future generations?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I feel like, you know, anytime you can make a connection to your readers in a more intimate and personal level, they're hearing personal story. You know, I share a little bit about my own grandparents and, you know, their experience with boarding school. And so I think sometimes when we hear history in kind of a more abstract and, you know, maybe you're just reading something that you don't have a personal connection to, sometimes it's hard to really face that truth. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, you know, people, when they read this, they can get to know me a little bit and feel a little comfortable with me, like a good friend, and that by the time they get to that story, they're ready to hear that their hearts are open and their minds are open, and that they're curious, and they could do a little bit more work and research. And of course, I provide a little bit of resources for people to dive into that kind of journey.
Yeah, and it is a really important part of the book. And one of the other pieces is you really bring through your Dakota woman, which I would love to talk about that word too. It's a word. And I don't know. Maybe you can help here with the letters, because it's looks like it's W-I-N-Y-A-N, but actually has a little hook, I guess.
Tail.
Yeah. That's a word. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have the English sounding N, and then we have one that's a nasal N. That's the one with the tail. And it's kind of like if you say the word ink, you know, you can, N is kind of nasally or kind of in the back, ink. So it's the same, wea.
So it changes. Yeah, it's not the hard N, it's softer, wea.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's beautiful. That is a beautiful word. And this book is your journey of reconnecting with all things that you know, kind of come from your background and the land that you live on. And and nature, and the idea of ceremony. It's such a gorgeous book. I'm so excited to be able to share it with our listeners. Folks, again, it is Perennial Ceremony, Lessons and Gifts from a Dakota Garden. And the structure of the book is really fascinating, and it makes perfect sense because you arrange it by seasons. When in the process of writing this, did you decide that that's the way you wanted to organize it?
You know, it came really naturally. I knew it right away because it's the way that we live. Mm. It's less about, you know, the calendar and the clock and all of that, but it's paying attention and being in tune to what's happening around you outside. You know, I think I explained that in the book, you know, we talk about tapping the trees. Well, it's not always on a prescribed, well, it never is on a prescribed date. It's more about paying attention to the rhythm. And then that, and for that particular thing is, you know, when the weather is like in the 40s during the day and then drops below freezing at night. And, you know, so just paying attention. This year was, again, we're in this kind of odd, you know, place where weather is a little bit less predictable. This year I uncovered my garlic. My husband said, hey, you got to get out there and uncover your garlic. I can see them poking up and, you know, then they're yellow. So I did that early. I don't remember when it was, but earlier this year I uncovered it all. And then of course it was, we got snow and, you know, cold weather again. So I had to go back and like kind of cover it up. They can withstand a little bit, but the amount of snow and everything, I just didn't want to kill my plants. So, yeah, it's just being attentive and in tune to when to plant, when to harvest, when to gather, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and no two seasons or no two cycles of all four seasons are alike. And so it is an ongoing learning process and for you to share your wisdoms. I learned so much. You should see my book. I have tons of little tags marked with great ideas. And I've had gardens in the past, but you know, it's such a struggle. It's a lot sometimes. So how do you kind of find that rhythm that helps you, you know, with mm-hmm. the processing? And I mean, it never ends, right? The work never mm-hmm. ends. And so what have you found to make that a little bit easier on yourself?
Well, part of it is just accepting that you're just experimenting and it's not, you know, it doesn't have to be all perfect. I'll just share like this year. So in the previous years, you know, you figure out about weeding and you start learning like, oh, it's not fun to weed in the middle of summer when it's really hot. So you just start learning and listening to others and researching. And so then I started putting mulch in between my rows and spending that extra energy up front in the spring to after the plants are pretty established and, you know, putting that down. It helps with the moisture as well. Of course, when we were dealing with the drought, but it helps so you don't have to keep going out there and weed. Mm-hmm. This year, though, well, actually, it would be last year, we planted, I was reading about something and thought, oh, I'm going to try this. So we did winter rye and hairy vetch throughout our garden. I was battling stickers. And so I thought, well, maybe that'll help because it's supposed to, you know, push out the weeds. And then we, you know, tilled in strips and then planted. And then we just keep the rye and vetch mode in between. Mm-hmm. And I think I kind of like this. I mean, we're going to see how things, you know, produce and everything, but I so far I'm really liking the results of it. And it kind of, one of the papers I read about it was that it would bring in more ladybugs and, you know, we're invaded by Asian beetles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jay and I were like, yeah, when was the last time we actually saw a real ladybug? I have ladybugs this year.
Oh, that's
and they're supposed to be, you know, a helpful bug, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I'm excited to see how this will turn out and if it's something that we can continue to practice. But that's the way we approach things, you know. You trial and error, and you know, sometimes, oh, I got to move this. This year, I rotate my fence around where I have my peas and beans climb up, and I had, you know, Jay put it in, and I should have had to move it a little bit, but it, you know, when he put it in, the leaves were not out from our pear tree. So it's in a spot that's a little bit shadier. So, you know, again, it's like just having that grace with yourself and that you're just, you know, you're kind of experimenting and seeing what you're learning along the way. So yeah, that's how I approach it.
That feels a lot more comfortable, and because it's never going to be perfect, that's for sure. And every season's going to present its challenges. And I learned, because one of the things you talked about was rhubarb, which we are huge rhubarb fans at our household, and that you could use the rhubarb leaves for even though they're poisonous, you know, to humans, but you can use that to stop some of the weeds in your garden. And that, I had never heard that before.
Yeah, I feel like part of that is that kind of resourcefulness. Mm. You know, we're kind of a throwaway society. And I would say I gained this this kind of thinking from my mother, who, you know, saved plastic bags, and well, she still does. She saves everything. You know, there's a purpose. You can reuse things. So that's, I think, how I've approached things. I mean, I just shelled a big batch of peas, and I took those out, and, you know, instead of throwing them in the compost, which of course is also a good purpose, I laid them out in between a row, and, you know, and so then that helps, you know, it helps in so many ways. It's regenerative purpose.
The pea shells, you mean?
Yeah, the pea shells. Yep. Mm. Yeah, the pea pods. Mm-hmm. Yep. I just try to kind of think of, you know, there's so many things around you that you can find purpose and bring into the garden that helps, you know, have dual purpose.
It's, yeah, there's so much. And one of the great things you have in here is recipes, I have to say. I was very excited about so many of those. And so let's start with the rhubarb recipe that you have early on. We are waiting at our house. We transplanted some rhubarb. This is a special rhubarb, the one that I grew up with that is hard to find now. And a friend of my mom's had some, and she generously offered to help us with it. And we've transplanted. It's a strawberry rhubarb plant. And it takes, what we understand is we have to wait till the third year before we can harvest so that the rhizomes can fully develop. So we've been waiting and haven't had any from our garden this year. But I was really interested in your rhubarb tonic for two. It's a recipe I had never seen before. And so I'm going to ask a question for all of our listeners out there. It's rhubarb and strawberries, a banana, coconut water, and chia seeds. Mm-hmm. It sounds fabulous, but I've never done it. So my question about the recipe, most of the instructions are very simple and easy, but this one surprised me because you add the rhubarb right to the blender. And I wondered, did you have to pre-cook it before you did that?
No, I ate it raw.
Oh.
So, yeah. So one thing I'll just say about my recipes, just as a disclaimer, you know, the publisher, you know, asked when I would send the recipes in, you know, I cook kind of, I'm one of those cooks that don't really measure things. I just throw things together. And even as you described that, I just made a green smoothie. I call them green smoothies or whatever. And I liked calling that the spring tonic because this the one that you mentioned, because of what my grandma always said when I asked her about rhubarb. She said, oh, that's a spring tonic. It cleans your blood. So, and then, of course, you can only pick rhubarb up until, my mom always said, 4th of July.
Yep, that's what we grew up learning, too.
Yeah, yeah. But I just made one, and again, I just throw in kind of what's around. So I had some spinach leaves. I had rhubarb. I had just a handful of strawberries, fresh strawberries. I always like to throw a banana in because, you know, sometimes when you have bananas and then you don't eat them right away. And then when they're starting to get too dark, I just throw them into the freezer and then I pull them out and use them for my smoothies.
Mm-hmm.
So don't throw your bananas away when they start getting too ripe, overripe.
Yeah, it does work. It's surprising.
And the chia seeds, I just add that for a little protein, you know, just to put that in there. And the coconut water is good so that it's not so thick. But yeah, you just kind of throw in whatever. I had a leftover cucumber and, I threw in some pears, some canned pears.
Mm.
But yeah, I like to make those. They're a good breakfast too, especially if you're on the go.
Yeah, it's there's so much in here, and I learned a lot. And so, like I said, I've got the book marked like crazy. And one of the things that really fascinated me, because we kind of take for granted, I think, that you know, we see corn in the fields, and we think we know corn because we live in Minnesota. You know, we see beans, but this book opened my eyes to a whole new world of corn and beans. Yeah. And I want to thank you for that, because I had no idea that there were so many kinds of beans, and you helped teach us, you know, what kind of beans are good for what kind of recipes and different flavor profiles. And I mean, I learned that corn can be cross-pollinated from miles away, which I had no idea. And so you as a gardener, especially if you're growing heirloom corns, have to be really careful so that the fields that are near you don't actually end up cross-contaminating or pollinating, if that's the right word. So there's a funny word in here I'm going to share with, because I think everybody will get a kick out of this, that they're actually, for people who grow heirloom corn, that there's such a thing as a corn condom.
Oh, yeah. I learned that from Dream of Wild Health, you know, in their work, because, you know, they're really trying to retain a number of seeds, you know, so that they grow on a much larger scale. So it's really important for them, you know, to retain the genetics of these corn seeds and the other seeds that are gifted to them. Yeah. I have like three sides of my garden that are sort of protected. Like I have a big pine trees on the neighbor's yard, and then the hillside down below, and then our house. And then, so I have one side that's pretty exposed, but right across from us is restored prairie. And then there still is some fields a little ways away, but you could kind of figure out too, like, you know, they always alternate between field corn and soybeans every other year. So you can kind of plant it too. The other thing is where you plant it in your garden, and then how I plant. Sometimes I just, you know, it's, if you could plant kind of more in a square, you know, it's more likelihood, you know, they'll pollinate, you know, passing back and forth to each other instead of in just like, say you had one row or something.
Ah, okay.
So you just learn little tricks and stuff like that with it. But so I don't need to use corn condoms, I guess, is what my point was. But I know that people can do that. Well, and then also when you're, you know, picking the corn and you saving your seed, and I save more in the center with the big kernels, I take it from a good cob, and you look at the cob and make sure it's of the corn that you have. You know, if it has that reddish, then it somehow got, so then I wouldn't take it, you know, if I can tell if it got cross-pollinated. So I wouldn't take kernels from that particular cob. So there's little ways that you can kind of work through that. This year, I didn't plant any Indian corn. I planted Dakota popcorn, which I absolutely love. And then I planted sweet corn up at my dad's garden, and I'm hoping the raccoons don't get it. It looks pretty good right now. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I think that's great that you, you know, preserve some of those things and, you know, that you've taken the time to put these wisdoms down for all of us to enjoy, because, you know, there's things about the garden, the plants, the insects and nature, that you pass along in this book. And it is so important that we tell these stories and share this knowledge. And I do worry that there will be so many of the younger generation that will think, oh, I'll just go to the computer and figure it out. But that's not the experience. That's not, you know, the trial and error that you're talking about. Can you talk about how you balance digging into the bigger world? Like, you know, you take us on some great journeys in this book, like trying to figure out, this was, if the bees had helped to make your morning cup of coffee, that's worth the read in the book. I think that it was great. You talk about things like owning the land and how that, the history of that and what that means, and looking at your plat records, and, you know, even little things about like the red squirrel. So you do take us on these journeys, but you also especially teach us about living with your land and knowing, as you mentioned earlier, when to tap the maples or plant the seedlings or pick the apples. So those are the things that I don't think you're going to get from and the internet search that everybody might think is the answer. So do you worry about those things being lost?
I do somewhat because I feel like people are so attached to their devices and they miss out on so much. I've been to I'll go to a great park and then, you know, there's so much to explore, all the sensory experiences. And then somebody will come by and they'll have a big boombox playing and kind of disrupting the whole, you know, you won't hear, different bird songs or the way, you know, water falls over rocks or the way the wind blows through cottonwood trees or, you know, on and on. But I just feel, if we can just shut some of that off and just be quiet and present, there's so much to learn from our plant and animal relatives. And so, you know, so much gifts there just right for us. If we would take the time and be quiet and explore, I will say there's lots of kids that have come over and they're probably the funnest guests when I have a garden tour. Mm. They're so curious still. Mm-hmm. And so if you can, you know, provide that kind of opportunity for kids to go out and explore, you know, take their cell phones away maybe or something. I don't know. They're the funnest. You know, I've had kids come in and ask, where's the salsa tree? You know, so really connecting them to food and where it comes from. It's a lot of fun. That's the biggest thing I would say. When I was teaching in college, that would be one of the things I would always have it kind of as a sort of capstone project would be to ask students to spend 1 hour outside without anything and be real quiet and just sit by a tree or, you know, whatever. And it was really fun to read those excerpts. People, there was so many people that had anxiety and almost paranoia, worrying about what people are thinking about them sitting there, you know.
Oh, while they were in the middle of being quiet.
Yes, yes. And I thought, jeepers, you know, who cares what people think for one thing, you know.
Yeah.
You could see their journal would just transform. Pretty soon they were, they would get content and quiet and start wondering about this and that. And then they'd have some experience where it was healing for them mentally or physically. And then they'd start thinking about, well, what could I do? What could I do? What small thing could I do to support, you know, this beautiful, because I'd have them pick a place that you really love, you know, and then they'd think about, well, maybe I can even just pick up garbage, or maybe it's just I'm going to appreciate this place more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things I'd like to encourage young people is just to take that time. And there's just so much. And then that to me is when that curiosity comes. So when I go out to my garden, I don't bring a radio out or anything. I just sit out there and I might sit on the ground and weed or something. And then that, of course, that's when I heard those squirrels. I got curious. Mm-hmm. First, I thought it was a bird. And then I thought, wait a minute. No, I could tell it was moving. And
it was a sound, right?
Yeah. And then that's what leads you down some okay, I got to learn a little bit more about this. I'm curious. And then, of course, some of that imagination comes in, too. You kind of what do you think that squirrel is telling? I can tell there's two different squirrels. What's going on here? And then, you know, your imagination comes into play.
It's so beautiful. And folks, I want to remind you that we are lucky that Teresa will be coming to Northfield. And that is, again, at Content Bookstore on Thursday, the 27th of June, 2024, from 6 to 7:30. And you can get your copy of Perennial Ceremony available now, or you can come to the event. And it's going to be a great discussion and reading. You can get information at contentbookstore.com. And I'm so excited that you're coming next week. I've got that on my calendar because I know we're not going to get through all the questions that I have here.
Yeah.
You tell us the wisdoms of what I like is the full cycle, because it's not just the gardening, but it's also the, you know, sharing and the cooking and the pieces that go with that. So the recipes you have are familiar in some ways, which is good. Things like macaroni pea salad, which looked absolutely incredible. My favorite that you listed, tuna noodle casserole, which I hadn't thought of in a long time. And you reminded me what to do with those old, the ends of the potato chip bag. So I will probably be making that. and things like yeah. pizza sauce. There's a comforting and yummy, but then you have things that are familiar, but there's a twist. And that was really fun for me, like jalapeno cheddar zucchini bread or squash boats. I'd never thought of making them the way that you did. There's a recipe that I'm not sure I'm saying this right, waskuya, which is using the dried corn, and that recipe is worth learning how to, your thoughts on how to do that. Pear muffins, I've never put pears in a muffin before, all kinds of other fruit. And then something is as wonderful as honey thyme apples and egg breakfast.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, I should make that. That sounds good.
It does. Yeah. No, you've, and they're very accessible. The ingredients are not complicated. You know, the instructions, like you said, are, they make sense, right? That these things go together. So how did you pick the recipes? Because I bet there's even more you could share.
You know, some of them are just things that I grew up on, you know, like that tuna noodle casserole. Mm-hmm. We all grew up on that. But there's that piece of like of that resourcefulness. Oh, I don't want to throw these crumbs in, you know, in the garbage.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say they're just crumbs, but, you know, you always have those potato chips that are left over and nobody wants to eat them. But it seems like a waste to throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's part of just, again, it's the experimenting. Like I read a lot of different recipes or watch the cooking shows on TV and I don't follow it, you know, probably at all, but you get so many ideas about what pairs well with each other. And those pear muffins came out of the idea of like, we have two pear trees and the one is like a Bartlett and there's so many bushels and bushels and I go around every year and give them away and I just don't want them to go to waste. They're so delicious. So there's different things I do with them. I, you know, dry some, of course I can some. By the way, dried pears are so good. They're like candy. They're so delicious. And then always to have them, you know, you get to relive that whole experience in the wintertime. But the pears, then I chop them up in, you know, 2 cups and or about that. And then I use those to make those muffins. So I just, you know, you don't want things to go to waste. And of course, there's plenty enough for the birds and the squirrels and the deer and everything. But yeah, just to find a way to utilize all that's around you. You know, we have gooseberries on the hillside. I love doing that. And again, those are more some of those recipes or, you know, traditions of gathering that are really tied to memories and, you know, things that remind you of your relatives from long ago.
It's absolutely incredible. So there's a lot to be gained for everybody from this. And of course, I think cooking seasonally is probably one of the best things that you can do.
Yeah.
That
yes.
And you do, all the recipes are within the season that you find those ingredients. So you can, you know, cook along with the gardening. Even if you don't have a garden, you can get the ingredients at the farmer's market or, you know, fresh in the store. And there's a lot in here too about ceremony, which is just such a, is something that I think we desperately need more of in this world. And you quote Robin Wall Kimmerer, am I saying that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Of Braiding Sweetgrass, which is a well-known book. And she, in that it says, ceremonies are the way we remember to remember. And I love that phrase.
Yeah.
And how is it that you thought about ceremonies before you wrote the book, and now that you've written it, what has changed for you?
You know, in the beginning, in the introduction, I talk a little bit about, you know, the tension I always had between Christianity and my Dakota traditions, and then I kind of relive an experience I had probably, I don't know, maybe it was 10 years ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
We were in a program. I was in school and we were in Hawaii learning along with our indigenous relatives. And they invited us to a sunrise ceremony at the beach. And that was real pivotal for me. That was a real transformational experience. And I won't spoil it for the readers. They can read about it. But the takeaway for me, it really made me start questioning and wondering about, well, what is ceremony? And I started thinking about different ceremonies, like whether it's baptism or a wedding or a funeral or our Dakota traditions or Dakota ceremonies. And I started writing down all the characteristics in my mind that you experience, you know, so like when it's a funeral, we're, you know, maybe celebrate. I just had a funeral with my dad, you know, celebrating the life, you know, the grief and loss, healing from that, you know, that helps. I was surprised how much the funeral helped me, like from even from the day before, I felt still so raw. And then that funeral really was helpful.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I just started writing down, you know, all those characteristics and aspects of different ceremonies, celebration of life. Sometimes when we have a wedding, you know, we're celebrating that union, but then we're like feasting together and bringing family together. So it just goes on and on. And I just started scribbling this all down and I started thinking, you know, I experience all this in our way of life of gardening and foraging and preserving and feeding friends and family. I find that all those characteristics and that seasonal cycle. And so that's kind of how that emerged. And I just found so much comfort, you know, from the garden. Mm-hmm. And again, that's, you know, part of what ceremony is intended to do, you know, to bring healing and comfort and solace to you. So even when my dad passed away last month, and while I was caring for him, he was in hospice at home. And even that was, you know, really challenging to, you know, physically and care for somebody. And I would replenish myself by going to the garden and then, you know, felt refreshed and okay, you know, can continue on. And then of course, memories, picking asparagus, that was one of the things I would always share with my dad. And because we, you know, and again, it's in the book, but, there's a childhood memory of going to my grandma's and I'm with my dad and, our whole family there. And, my grandma would always say, okay, keep your eyes peeled. And, it kind of is reconnecting to those memories that, make you feel good, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's how that whole idea of, living a ceremonial life through the garden, through the land.
It's so important for us to hear, and I'm so sorry about the loss of your father. He was a character in the book, and you got to tell us a little about him, so we got to know him and your growing up on the farm and some of the ways that he, you know, taught you about the land and always kept food for the family. You mentioned a line that stands out to me that, you know, you never felt hungry growing up. Might not have had a lot, but that wasn't one of the things, because you had learned all these things about preserving and saving and growing and taking care of the land that, you know, gave you the food. And so his legacy lives through you. And I think that idea of ceremony is so important, because I hadn't thought of it until you were talking about your dad, how, those rituals, those things that are familiar, those things that have lived through generations are there because there's, you know, there's help there, there's support there, there's connection there. And, we can't lose that.
Yeah. Yeah, it just made me think of, like, in a little, maybe, I don't know, let's see, should we say 3 weeks or something, maybe? I'll probably have fresh green beans, and then I'll relive that experience of a recipe through our German, through my dad, through his side of the family, a fresh green bean soup. Oh, is it ever so good.
I marked that recipe.
Yes, it'll be so good, but then it's, you know, carrying on that tradition, but then just those memories and how they fortify and our soul and make us feel happy. And I hope that all my kids and grandkids and in the future will all, you know, continue to carry these forward. And they all have these kind of stories that go along with it. And I think that's also important.
Yeah. I think the green bean soup, and I'm not finding the recipe right now as I'm flipping through the book, but didn't that have some sort of a dumpling in it? Is that the one?
Yeah, you can do a dumpling with it, or you can do, if you want, like maybe a new potato too would really be good. You know, some kind of starch. And that, along with some good fat and some green bean. Oh, yum.
Well, and you do say that, I think, a lot in here that you know, it's using what you have. So there might be substitutes or ways to enhance it. So all of these are like building recipes that you can, you know, to your taste, to your, you know, if you want more peppers or less or more heat or more texture, you can do that. And one of the things, you are known for your soups.
Yes.
And I love many, many of the soups in here. And I don't know, there's just so much I learned about making soup from you. It just the layering and also the flexibility of it. Because each soup is probably going to be different, because each ingredient is different. Every time you harvest it, it's a, you know, might be a different variety of bean or a different, you know, you might have a different meat available, because you are really good at using what's around you, and that's a really good lesson for all of us.
I honestly, most of the time, I just open the fridge and my garden, whatever I've harvested. What do I have of leftover? What's going to go bad soon if I don't use it? And that's how it's that resourcefulness. And I think it's, you know, they have these commercials on TV where you buy a thing of strawberries and then it shows like eventually you're just throwing it away. You know, so it's that. So I think that's a small thing we can do. You know, you think about the carbon footprint. That's that commercial that shows that. The carbon footprint it takes to, you know, bring us a pint of strawberries. Well, how do we honor that then? Mm-hmm. So that's how I cook. And in fact, that's oftentimes why I do a green smoothie. Like, oh, this batch of spinach is going to go bad. Let's quickly throw it in here and do this and add that. And that's the way I cook as well. Like, again, right now we have an abundance of asparagus and snow peas. So I've been making a lot of stir fries. Or the other day I had some girlfriends over in honor of the solstice. And so I was like, what could I make? Cause I had been really busy and things and hadn't been time to cook. I was like, what could I bring? So I made some hummus and I used, garlic scapes, you know, the last of the garlic scapes that I hadn't used up yet. And of course some beans that I grew. Mm-hmm. That I always have stored on my counter. And then I served it with, a few little crackers, but then snow peas. And boy, was that ever good. I hadn't tried snow peas with bean dip or hummus. I say bean dip for the young people that, you know, you just change the words, but hummus.
Right.
Yeah. And then I had some zucchini bread with a little cinnamon butter. Mm. I can't remember what else, but. Yeah, I just pulled together. I went and gathered some apple mint from the garden. And then, you know, one of the great things I love about mint tea, you know, most people drink it hot, but if you let it cool off and then you put it over ice in the summer, oh, it's so good. It's so refreshing.
I think there's a recipe for that in the book too. So folks are going to, and that's probably just your experience that lets you know. And build that, as you do that again and again, you build confidence that you can create a soup or a dip or a bread that's going to go all go together and taste good to you. And this book is like a big hug, right? I mean, there's just so much in it to feel like, okay, I can do this, and this is good for me, and I just feel inspired. I think I even made. I was going to have some polenta with some sausages, and I just had some spinach from the CSA that I have, and I used some garden or the scapes, the garlic scapes with it, and it was I felt like I was just winging it, right? Oh, I'll put a little of this and that, and it was delicious. So
yes,
thank you for that, because the garlic scapes hadn't been something I was comfortable with. I've, you know, gotten them before, but. I just thought, I'm going to try this. And it was absolutely fabulous. So I thank you for that. And especially the part about ceremony. I want to close with this quote that's in here. It's just to me, because it's not just about the act of the ceremony. And through this quote, it's on page 59, if folks are following along in Perennial Ceremony by my guest, Teresa Peterson, Lessons and Gifts from a Dakota Garden. You say that ceremony is not perfect, though it might be the process of mitigating the gap between sacredness and me and all that is incomplete, imperfect, and inconsolable. Through sacred acts and splendid gestures, there can still be pain and even loss, and so it is in the gardening rites and rituals as well. And I thought, oh yeah, because it's really about us feeling connected, right, to ourselves. Yes. And all of the different way, the surroundings and the food and the people. And that, it's just such a beautiful phrase. So thank you for sharing your gifts. And I don't know if you want to say any more about that connection that you made with ceremonies not perfect.
Yeah, I just feel like if we can think of ceremony and living in that way of more of the humanity and having the compassion and grace for ourselves and everything around us, mm-hmm. and remembering that to be a good relative to the land, the waters, our animal and plant nations, but also to ourselves. And I think that's kind of to me what that piece is about, is having that grace and compassion for ourselves as well. And we're not needing to seek that perfection, but just to live in, be present in the experience in the moment.
And that is such good advice. And there, I'm sure that we'll have a lively discussion at Content next week. I'm so excited. I hope that your journey is not too arduous through wandering through detours and flooded roads and such. But we are very much looking forward to your visit. And I hope everybody picks up a copy of Perennial Ceremony, Lessons and Gifts from a Dakota Garden from the University of Minnesota Press, which I want to give a big shout out to. They do incredible, incredible things at that press. And this is just one new addition to that. So thank you for being my guest on Artzany Radio today.
Oh, Pidamaya, it's been my pleasure, Paula.
That's so such a thrill. And we'll meet you in person. Thank you.
Yes.
Folks, this is Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. I want to thank you so much for being a part of the show and joining me on this. I hope that you will always remember to tune your imagination and, of course, add some Art Zany to your life.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault. The Paradise Center for the Arts is a vibrant cultural and artistic gathering spot in historic downtown Faribault. The Paradise is committed to offering high-quality visual and performing art opportunities for Faribault and our region. Regular events spotlight some of the best artists and musicians in our area and throughout Minnesota and the Upper Midwest. Our beautifully restored facility includes art galleries, classrooms, clay and textile labs, a gift shop and rehearsal spaces, in addition to a 300-seat auditorium. Visit ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org for a full schedule of events or call our box office at 507-332-7372.
95.1 The One.